I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. In a few minutes, you talk back about what we did right or not so right in the last week. But first, it's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys give us the word on whatever's in the news and whatever's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week are Jimmy Israel, a freelance writer, Eugene Robinson, an author and blogger, syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete, and blogger Michael David Cobb Bowen. I hear they want to talk about the idea of rallies for change, a big marches plan for this weekend in Philadelphia. Another call for action involves a no-shopping day to prove the worth of black folks' spending. Are these measures really effective? And America's Dad gives more advice for the community. I might jump in, but for now, take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Hey, hey, fellas, welcome to the shop. How we living?
How you doing? Hey, how you doing?
All right, fellas, well, let's turn it right up, talking about Radio 1 host Warren Ballantyne. He's calling for a blackout on November 2nd, urging black people not to spend any money that day to protest racial injustice and the lack of stronger federal hate crime legislation. Now, wait, Huge, I hear you laughing, but I know we can count on you, right?
Hey, I didn't spend any money today. In fact, I didn't spend any money yesterday because I don't have the money to spend. See, so I guess, in my own way, I'm jumping both feet forward into symbolic activity that proves nothing.
Well, Kopsky, is it my imagination or is this boycott missing something, like a deadline?
Yeah,
some
I know.
Some kind of coherent, like specific goal?
If we all jumped up in the air and landed at the same time, would it throw the planet off its axis? No. November 3rd, everybody's going to be back to normal.
These large-scale symbolic activities, I mean, it's just, it's wearisome, you know? I mean, I guess maybe he needs something to do with his time, something fruitful and engaging. But, policy is not made that way, unless we're talking about the French Revolution. So, you know, it's maybe good to get him off the street for a bit of time. But, you know, I'd like to see some real kind of fruitful, engaging policy directives that maybe help, you know? Maybe encourage people to stay behind their desk instead of getting out from behind their desk. I don't know.
You know what's interesting, Huge, while you snapping on your boy, you know, the internet kind of gave birth to the whole Gen 6 protest. And Ruben, could the internet possibly mobilize something like this?
You know, it's possible, but first I just jog my memory here. This is the same Warren Ballantyne who appeared on Lou Dobbs and said, we have to control illegal immigration because if not, one day all our kids are going to have to learn how to speak Spanish.
Oh.
Now, ignorant comments like that make me want to boycott Warren Ballantyne.
Yikes.
But having said that, I digress. I will tell you, the last time a boycott worked, and I want to give some historical props here to the Montgomery bus boycott. That was a real boycott. That actually worked. The reason it worked was because it went in conjunction with legal efforts and voter registration drives and all this other stuff that was part of the civil rights movement. I don't think that just straight out marches and boycotts really work this way. And I say the same thing with the UFW boycott, whatever. The idea that you're going to get people to not buy something and somehow that's going to bring, you know, these people to their knees, that just doesn't work anymore. It's a tired old tactic. We need to move beyond that. African Americans and Latinos have a lot of money to spend. And that's how you really influence things, by spending money. You decide you're going to spend it at this company or that company. But this idea that you're going to sit on your money and not spend it, that's like taking whatever power you have and relinquishing it. It doesn't make any sense.
Kopsky?
You got to work with the infrastructure. And I sense a theme here because I see this happening in so many different places where people have a social experiment and they think, well, if we do this one thing and if 10,000 people show up, then we'll change the world. It doesn't happen that way. You change the world by working and doing things on a full-time basis.
Well, can I just push back a little bit on this, guys? Because a couple things. One is that in a number of jurisdictions, there have been immigration advocates have asked for people to spend one day away from the stores just to show the buying power of the community. One of the things they're saying is, we're not invisible. You may think we're invisible, but we're not invisible, just to make that statement. Don't you think that's kind of things effective? And look at the Gina 6 case. I mean, getting 20,000 people to take a day off and to go down to the small town just to say, we are watching. You don't think that that's powerful?
That's a really interesting point, Michelle.
It's a good point. I think this, though, Jimmy, if I may just jump in. Ruben,
sure.
I think that it's important not to substitute one thing for another. It's important to think that, you know, you show up in Gina, you go for a march, you go out and turn out. All of a sudden, you've made that incredible difference. You can go back to your life. You need to register voters to vote out that district attorney. That's the way you affect change in Gina.
Right.
And I think that likewise with Latinos, and I said the same thing about the immigrant thing, you think because you don't go to work today or you don't spend money today or whatever that somehow you've impacted the situation? No. Learn English, become a citizen, and register and vote.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News, and you're listening to the guys at the barbershop. Back to you, Jimmy.
All right, well, let's keep it moving. Talking about Philly's police chief, now he's on bended knee asking 10,000 men to start patrolling the streets starting this weekend. Now, Cobb, I know you, bro. Is becoming a part-time cop, is it an option for you?
It's crazy. It's a bad idea, and it's a dangerous idea. How are they going to register 10,000 black men or 10,000 anything on a part-time basis? This requires the kind of infrastructure that I don't see. If the city's going to spend money, they should spend it the right way.
These are all volunteers. It's kind of reminiscent of the Guardian Angels. And I spoke to the head of the Philly chapter of the Guardian Angels yesterday. Her name is Heather DeRussy. And she told me that, 10,000 people is kind of an unrealistic number. And she's hopeful that the 1,000 people that have already signed up would not lose steam if they don't get the microwave results they were expecting. Now, Ruben, tell us a little bit about the rally in Texas.
Yeah, I mean, here you have in Irving, Texas, outside of Dallas, this controversy because local police there are enforcing federal immigration law. And it's something that a lot of local cops are looking at around the country, but also a lot of local cops don't want any part of. And so in Irving, it's really caused some concern because, face it, you have folks who live in Texas who go back, multiple generations since before Texas was part of the U.S., and they don't really like the idea they're being called on the carpet and asked to produce, where are your papers? Let's prove that you're in the country legally. And so they've gone out and they've done the typical thing. They're talking about boycotts. They're talking about going out and marching on the street in the street and all that. And I guess it's okay, but it's not the silver bullet. The silver bullet is, get power, get informed, go out there, get voting, get registered, and go out there and start voting out folks. You can affect change. But I think, it's not as sexy as having boycotts. Not as sexy as doing marches. Marches are fun. They're just not really a good way to affect change anymore.
Yeah, I agree. And speaking of affecting change, looks like, Dr. Cosby's at it again. Now, his new book, Come On People, demands that poor blacks take their destiny in their own hands. Now, Cosby's been preaching this gospel for a while. Are you a believer?
2 decades, at least. Well, he's America's dad, and I know my dad.
He's not my dad.
My grandfather.
No, he's not America's dad. He's not my dad.
Well, we voted for him like that. And he and Poussaint have been doing this from day one with the Cosby Show, and we made that a number one show. And when he made his book, Fatherhood, we made that a number one book. So we've been listening to the man, and his voice has been the same. I mean, he is an authentic PhD, and without him, when would we go and listen to Harvard sociologists? We wouldn't. So he is right to be out there and trying to move the inertia and drawing attention to basic things that people obviously aren't doing.
Well, right. You talked
about
guys,
I'm sorry. Could I throw a little clip in here? We had actually Bill Cosby's co-author, Dr. Alvin Poussaint, on the program earlier this week. Talked about the book. You want to hear a little bit of the interview?
Yeah, Michelle, go ahead. Drop that science.
One thing I would like them to take away from the book is, one, that they should take the high road, that they should be positive, that we really have to care for our children and treat them well and not accept behaviors that help them self-destruct. And we also emphasize in the book throughout that in order to deal with systemic racism and in order to get the things in society and change the disparities that are negative for blacks, that people have to be activists and they have to be participants.
Thanks, Michelle. That's a really powerful quote from Dr. Poussaint. You know what? And Cosby needs more people. You know why? Because, you talked about his books, Cosby. He had another book. It was called Enlightened Racism. He paid for the research behind this book by Soot Jolly, and he didn't co-author it. Once his thesis didn't get proved, he kind of took his name off of it. But the name of the book is Enlightened Racism. And essentially, the thesis is that that the Cosby Show made it harder for black people to get on because white people would look at black people now and compare their lives to the Cosby Show. That's what he said. Oh. That you disagree?
Because,
go ahead,
yeah,
Ruben.
This notion that show was so far removed from the old sort of minstrel shows. This showed an African-American couple, a doctor and a lawyer with kids who were like well-adjusted kids living in the suburbs. Good for them. I mean, the problem with television is not that we have too many shows like that. It's that we don't have enough shows like that.
Word, is there a Latino Cosby out there we're not aware of that's kind of beating the same kind of drum?
I'm going to tell you, there is somebody out there who does something like this. It's Edward James Olmos, who is an actor of some standing in the Latino community. He's been spreading this message for a long time, and he's gotten a lot of resistance from a lot of folks who think he's too conservative. But there needs to be more of that self-help message in the Latino community and in the Black community. And the reason Cosby is into it and the reason people listen to Cosby, guess what? It's because the Congressional Black Caucus and those so-called leaders in Washington have taken a walk on this. They have chickened out on this discussion, and they have left that vacuum there. So no wonder Cosby comes in and fills it.
You know what, Eugene, you know what, here's where I am. We're at a point now in history where we're listening to comedians give sociological advice, and that's what troubles me.
What I was going to interject there is I wonder if the message, his message, is reaching its intended audience, you know? Is he exploiting somehow, you know, our latent middle-class guilt, you know, Black folks' middle-class guilt, you know, the ones who made it versus the ones who didn't? Or is he having any impact in the so-called hood at all? I mean, is this something that is good or useful to people who are one click away from being completely disenfranchised, you know, who have dropped out of school eighth grade because the school had broken windows and their halls filled with garbage? I used to do this speaking thing at local high schools. I mean, is Cosby's message reaching there, or are his dollars reaching there, or anything else other than this being a kind of a massage fest for talking heads on Sunday afternoon TV? I don't know.
Eugene, I'm sorry. Can I just interject this one point? The fact is, he has been traveling around the country at his own expense, having these meetings in the community. He calls them call outs. You know, they're free to the community. Anybody can come. They're packed. People do come. So at least, you know, you can't say he's talking about people without talking to them, whether you like what he has to say or not. I just wanted to just throw that out there.
The problems of this kind of persistent underclass are so, the roots are so incredibly deep that, yeah, you're right. Your point well taken. Better he do that than nothing. But, you know, I really question whether writing a book is a solution to the problem.
Well, I think Cosby is speaking to us in the middle class and saying, you know, we ought to stand up and say we are doing this the right way. And we can't leave it to, you know, another self-destruction video or hip-hop rapper trying to say that I'm about middle-class values when they actually aren't. So I think Cosby is empowering the Black middle class to stand up where we may have been sitting down before.
Yeah, there's that. I'm just not convinced that he's the messenger. And I don't like the way he's given the message. When you start talking about people's mamas, you start dissing people's kids, you've really fouled him. You know, I hope that his message stays on point, and he doesn't start, you know, lobbing insults at people. You know what, fellas? Speaking of lobbing insults at people, I got to go to the person that always lobs insults at me. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm kicking it back to Michelle Martin.
That was too easy. That's like low-hanging fruit. You know, I can't even pick that
tough
up.
Love.
It's too easy.
Tough love.
All right.
Tough love, baby.
Jimmy Israel joined us from WFSU in Tallahassee, Florida, where he's a freelance writer and reporter. Ruben Navarrete joined us from KPBS in San Diego, where he writes for the San Diego Union-Tribune and CNN.com. Eugene Robinson joined us from Sports Byline Studios in San Francisco. He's a freelance writer and author. And Michael David Cobb Bowen is a blogger and founder of the Conservative Brotherhood. He joined us from our NPR West Bureau in Los Angeles. You can find links to all of our barbershop guests at our website, npr.org/tellmemore. Gentlemen, thanks so much for stopping into the shop today.
Hey, thank you.
Hey, thanks.
Yep, yep.